Hello, what is up guys? Eamon from PesoSmartPH here. Welcome to a new episode. Shout out to all the podcast listeners as well. Appreciate you all. Today we'll talk about a book by Christopher Voss and Tal Raz, Never Split the Difference. We'll be separating the discussion into 5 parts. The first one would be human psychology. Then we'll move on to Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. This is just an introduction to the concepts that might be of help with negotiation. And the third is the importance of listening. A couple of notes on talking. And lastly, we have negotiation. Let's kick things off with human psychology. In negotiations, you must gently guide your counterpart to discover the end goal as their own. This is essentially inception. The book never mentioned this term specifically, but I opted to use it to simplify things. It's about the other party convincing themselves that the solution you want is actually their own idea. This is letting your counterpart to do the work for you, suggest your solution himself. And this will give him or her the illusion of control while you define the conversation. And in moments of conflict, people react to their lack of power by either becoming extremely defensive or lashing out. This is what we call hostage mentality. This happens when people feel they're not in control. And this is also where the paradox of power comes in. The harder we push, the more likely we are to be met with resistance. We experience this whenever we are met by an overeager salesperson. They always want to get our yes, which is often just a non-committal yes, so that they will get off our backs. Effective negotiators strive for "that's right" instead of the usual yes. Saying yes just agrees with them and prevents further information gathering process. And saying "that's right" makes your counterpart feel good and correct. But hearing you're right is somewhat a disaster. It's used to eliminate the conversation and quit bothering you. This is also similar to the counterfeit yes. We always have to look and strive for the commitment yes. The rule of three can be useful to get the commitment yes. This simply means getting the other person to agree to the same thing 3 times in the same conversation, because it's very hard to repeatedly lie or fake conviction. So somewhat repetition is key. And then asking as a powerful tool. So in a famous study from the late 1970s, a Harvard psychology professor named Ellen Langer and her colleagues approached people waiting for copy machines and asked if they could cut the line. Sometimes they gave a reason and sometimes they didn't. What she found was crazy. So without giving a reason, 60% let her through, but when she did give one, more than 90% did. And it didn't really matter if the reason made sense. So one example was, "Excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I cut in line because I have to make copies." So that was one of the reasons. And most of the people let them cut the line. And just a reminder, in this world, you get what you ask for. You just have to ask correctly. And now, let's discuss Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. So again, this is going to be a very brief discussion. So in this book, Daniel argued that people are irrational beasts. And to become a more effective negotiator, we need to overcome our emotional brain, the animalistic, irrational, and unreliable beast. People are neither fully rational nor completely selfish, and their tastes are anything but stable. People will often sooner die than give up their autonomy. People feel obliged to repay debts of kindness, so just a reminder, always be kind. When somebody gives you something, they expect something in return. And liars use more words than truth tellers and use far more third person pronouns. So those are just simple reminders, especially when you're in a situation that you have to negotiate. Feeling is a form of thinking. Both are ways we process information. However, feeling is much faster than thinking. Our unconscious and irrational brain distorts the way we see the world, and we filter and simplify information based on our personal experiences and preferences. This is what we call cognitive bias. And it's also natural to feel fear or anger. We all have negative emotions. Anyone who tells you that they don't feel those negative emotions are most likely lying. Although you have to understand that anger reduces our cognitive ability. This is why it's important to practice delay whenever you feel angry. This is a solution from the Stoics, and it will greatly benefit you once you practice it. And whenever we experience or feel fear, most of the time, the best way to deal with it is just to do nothing. Our primal instinct will prompt the fight or flight response when we experience stress or fear. Try to change that by not doing anything. A good example is when the stock market crashes. If you're invested, you'll feel doubtful with your investments and you'll feel fear that the market will continue to go down. Most people will sell their stocks when the market crashes. This is the wrong choice and a very bad strategy. Always remember, we strive to buy low and sell high. That is the most basic rule when investing. Again, buy low and then sell high. If you didn't do anything at all, you'll thank yourself when the market recovers. So one good example was back in 2020. A lot of people, especially the newbies, they sold their stocks when the stock market crashed. For example, PH Market went down to around 4K. And then eventually it just recovered after a year. So almost all of the stocks, like for example, Jollibee, was selling at around 90 pesos per share. And then, like after a year, it was at 200 again. I believe it's around 200 plus-ish today. So you just have to consider your capital in investments as an expense already. That's what I do. And it will make it easier for you to like accept those paper losses. They're not permanent, especially if you're invested in good stocks and good companies. And then, moving on to prospect theory, this plays a big role to investors, whether new or experienced. So people take unwarranted risks in the face of uncertain losses. It describes how we choose between options that involve risk. And with the certainty effect, people are drawn to sure things over probabilities, even when the probability is a better choice. So certainty effect, we can probably like discuss this in a separate video or episode, because this is something, there's something to do with, you know, scams. So this is why people are often scammed by, you know, by bad actors, because of the certainty effect. If it's a sure thing, especially in investments, it's most likely or it's most probably a scam. But yeah, I digress. So we are also more likely to act to avert a loss than to realize an equal gain. This is what we call loss aversion. This is why people who statistically don't need insurance buy them. And even worse, they call it an investment. It's essentially a protection from loss, not necessarily an investment. People will take more risks to avoid a loss than to realize a gain. This is very common to new investors. And then lastly, we have the framing effect. So people respond differently depending on how something is framed. A common example is the half glass full or half glass empty. Or at the grocery store, you're more likely to grab the 8% lean beef compared to the 20% fat beef, even though they're the same. And we place more value moving from 90% to 100% compared to 45% to 55%, even if both have a net gain of 10%. So yeah, framing effect is very fascinating and very interesting. Now let's move on to listening. So this is said to be the cheapest and most effective concession. Although it's not easy to listen well, it is a very valuable skill. Listening is the most active activity you can do. Others think that listening is a passive activity. Because we are easily distracted, we often engage in selective listening, which means hearing only what we want to hear. So we always set up some sort of filter when we do that. You can say that's justifiable because according to George A. Miller, an American psychologist, we can only process about 7 pieces of information in our conscious mind at any given moment. We are easily overwhelmed. All the more reason to practice active listening, because the goal at the outset is to extract and observe as much information as possible. Don't try to be a smart ass and think you don't have anything to discover. Remember, the more you know about someone, the more power you have. And when you experience pushback or any kind of animosity, the best way to deal with negativity is to observe it without reaction and without judgment, and see how your counterpart will react. And to become a better listener, try to practice tactical empathy. This is basically listening as a martial art. Empathy is not about being nice or agreeing with the other side. It's about understanding them. Always acknowledge someone's situation to convey that you are truly listening. Then applying listening and moving on to talking. Of course, if you don't talk, then the negotiation won't go anywhere. Of course, after listening and listening, you have to do the talking as well. So before we move on to labeling, I just want to introduce you to 3 types of voices that was mentioned in the book. And you may use this depending on the situation. So the first one is the late night FM DJ voice. So this is the voice of calm and reason. Practice this by always ending your sentences with a downward inflecting tone. So something like that. Then the second is a positive and playful voice. So you have to relax and smile while you're talking. So even on the phone, smiling has an effect on the way you speak. This is especially useful when you're trying to haggle prices in the wet market. If you go there, if you shop there, if you buy things there, and whenever you try to get a discount at any store. And in the third one, you don't usually use this, or this is not recommended to be used at any setting. This direct or assertive voice. So again, use this rarely because people lose their sense of autonomy when they think someone is ordering them around. So again, we want to be like the autonomous person all the time. And then after listening to your counterpart, repeating a perspective back to them can be helpful. This is what we call labeling. So you may start your labels with "it seems like," or "it sounds like," or "it looks like." For example, if you're a customer support and a client is frustrated because she can't proceed with an order, you may say, "it looks like you're having difficulties placing your order. What can I do to help?" Then she will tell you more information about what she wants to accomplish. This example is a little bit simplistic, but I hope that you get the idea. And then along with labeling, you may also try mirroring your counterpart. So this is also called isopraxism, or the mirroring effect. And it is essentially imitation. It is an effective strategy because we copy each other to comfort each other. And we fear what's different, and we are always drawn to what's similar and what is comfortable, I would say, or what's familiar. Keep in mind that quote-unquote, "please help me understand" is the intention of most mirrors. And this is where the similarity principle comes in. We trust people more when we view them as being similar or familiar, as I've said earlier. And then you have your labels, you have your mirrors. Now let's take it to the next level with calibrated questions. So essentially, you will apply those principles when you try to formulate your calibrated questions and when you ask your calibrated questions. Essentially, these are queries that the other side can respond to, but it doesn't really have a fixed answer. This is where the FBI's most potent negotiating tool comes in, asking open-ended questions. So you will ask how or what questions. This creates an inescapable logic trap. So some of the examples are, how am I supposed to do that? What made you dislike this? How can we make things better? What motivates you to proceed with this deal? What can I do to help? So ask these questions over and over again until the other party gets worn out. So this is basically the war of attrition. And asking how questions is also a great and, you know, gentle or graceful way to say no. When you are verbally assaulted, don't try to counterattack. Disarm your counterpart and ask calibrated questions instead. This essentially inception again, going back to the first part of what we talked about earlier. You keep the conversation in a loop and your counterpart will eventually find the solution that you want themselves. And lastly, if you want to make problems go away, you can try to use the "look, I'm an asshole" line. So an example would be, "look, I'm an asshole. Can we try to start over?" So in this case, you're admitting that you were wrong and you give the illusion of power back to your counterpart by doing this. And now to sum everything up, we will apply what we've learned so far to negotiation. First thing you have to do is to prepare for a negotiation. Preparation is very critical with any kind of negotiation, because if you fail to plan, you're essentially planning to fail. Remember that this is an information gathering and behavior influencing process with an outcome that serves you. Consider it as a communication with results. So the more you know about someone, the more power you have. We mentioned that earlier, but I just want to reiterate that quote. And when people have bad information, they usually make bad choices as well. Negotiators are decision architects, so decide that you'll be one. Make sure you understand that emotions and emotional intelligence would have to be central to an effective negotiation. not necessarily the things to be overcome. And what you have to do is to calm people down, establish rapport, gain trust, and deploy empathy. As a side note, I believe or I think that Stoics are probably good negotiators. And going back on topic, you don't have to avoid honest and clear conflict. In my opinion, you have to embrace them. This is at the heart of any collaboration. It's what makes conflict potentially meaningful and productive for all parties. Conflict is often the path to great deals, and it's not the guy across the table that scares us. It's conflict itself. Try to make an accusation audit, which means listening This means listing every terrible thing your counterpart could say about you. So the beauty of going right after negativity is that it brings us to a safe zone of empathy. And with all of these, always remember what Mike Tyson said. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So make sure that you have a backup plan for the backup plan for the original plan. And now let's talk about how to deal with your counterpart. So first, do not make unwarranted assumptions about them. This is where you'll benefit from experiential learning, which is learning from your experiences. So do not make assumptions, ask calibrated questions instead. Know that being right isn't the key to a successful negotiation. Having the right mindset is. You need a common ground with your counterpart, and a good way to start is with humor or humanity, which are the best ways to break the ice and remove roadblocks. The next one, never argue. Negotiation is a process of discovery. So according to San Chu, of the one who wrote The Art of War, the supreme art of war is subduing the enemy without fighting them. So again, you don't have to argue, you don't have to fight them. You don't always have to be right. And then you have to give the other side the illusion of control again to gain the upper hand. And when things get like too hectic or like too fast, or we're moving towards like something on a very fast pace, you can slow things down. Don't go too fast and never be impatient. When you slow down the process, you also calm it down. And lastly, you have to use leverage. So to get leverage, you have to persuade your counterpart that they have something to lose if the deal falls through. So people's fear of deadlines, this actually arbitrary. So it's almost always flexible, and it hardly ever trigger any consequences that we might have think of. And then you can also use the mysterious power of odd numbers. So when you're negotiating your compensation, a contract that involves a fee or a raise request, you may use this. It gives an impression that you are very, very precise with the numbers that you want. And then we also have this misunderstood relationship with fairness. So we can go back to the Pareto improvement principle. We all have a sense of what's fair and what's not. You have to uncover your counterpart's view about fairness in order to get more leverage. And you can also take advantage of neural resonance. So this means closely observing a person's face, gestures, and tone of voice, so that our brain begins to align with theirs. So, sort of like mirroring. Have you ever been in a room with someone who's angry or mad, and you just feel very icky or uncomfortable about it? So that's essentially neural resonance. The brain is directly mirroring the feelings, emotions, mood, or actions that it has observed. Your counterpart has pieces of information whose value they don't understand. Try to uncover it so that you may use it to your advantage. Again, you will gain more leverage by doing that. And remember that a negotiation starts when someone says no. So make sure, or it always makes sense to start with no. People are much more open to moving forward towards new or alternative options or ideas when, you know, when you say no or when you disagree with them. Saying no makes the speaker feel safe, secure, and in control. So trigger it immediately. And according to Robert Estabrook, he who has learned to disagree without being disagreeable has discovered the most valuable secret of negotiation. And then when a deadline has been set to a specific project you're working on and you're already busy with something else, you may say no by asking your counterpart, how am I supposed to do that? Or if you're, like, for example, talking with your boss, which project should I deprioritize to get this done? So you're essentially saying no without, you know, saying no by asking them questions that can't be answered by just, you know, yes or no. So it's usually like open-ended and they have to think for themselves in order to answer your question. So again, it's more like inception. And remember that your counterpart is your partner, not your foe. Remember that when the negotiation is over for one side, it's also over for the other two. And yeah, compromise or splitting the difference often lead to terrible outcomes. So never split the difference. No deal is actually much better than a mediocre or a compromise deal. Because compromising is easy. Compromise because it is safe and is often the path to least resistance. You have to embrace the hard stuff. And you have to take the more difficult route sometimes. Deal killers are often more important than deal makers. So always remember that. A good analogy is someone wearing one black shoe and one brown shoe because they can't find the correct pair for either one. It will make the person look foolish. So in short, don't compromise. Yep, that's gonna be it for this episode, guys. Thank you for watching and listening. I hope that you learned something from this, and hopefully you can use this in, for example, investing or probably negotiating something, whether that's a raise or whether it's a fee for a project that you're doing or anything, or probably just negotiating with your kid if you're having a hard time with that, or negotiating with your friends or whatever. But yeah, I'll see you all in the next one. Always remember, be passive smart.